Okay, so we wanted to do this podcast primarily to focus on four major subjects around healthcare: technology, behavioral health, aging, and pharmacy. There's obviously a lot in all of those individual subjects, but we kind of wanted to outline why we think these are some of the main points that we want to discuss on this podcast, why we want to talk to experts in these fields, and why we think it's so critical to better understand each of these things, you know, now and moving forward. So Don, kind of talking about, starting with technology, I suppose, what about that stands out in the whole landscape of healthcare to you?
Yeah, I think when you look at the four that we're talking about, one of the things that's really happened over the last few years with COVID, with a worldwide pandemic, is these things have sort of come to the forefront of being even more important than they were before we dealt with COVID. For instance, with technology, we were on the cusp of a lot of virtual healthcare. We were on the cusp of electronic medical records becoming much more ubiquitous. But because of COVID, what we've seen is many people had to get their healthcare virtually. And so we've seen technology really kind of blossom and bring with it some of the issues that of privacy, of security, of access that we're having to deal with now.
Sure. It certainly seems like, I think before COVID, technology was, it was like a perk for healthcare, you know, like the introduction of wearables. People got, you know, watches that could monitor, you know, heart rate or steps or perceived physical output. And these were things that, you know, some people chose to use because maybe they were techies, maybe they were exercise freaks, maybe they like data, maybe it was just a new thing. And the idea of using it, you know, for healthcare to work in concert with a doctor or, you know, a treatment plan of some sort, that really wasn't the way we thought about it prior to COVID. But now, when, you know, it was harder to go into a doctor's office to check vitals, things like that, we kind of saw the immediate use that some of these wearables might have beyond just a cool technological thing you can have. So yeah, that transition was certainly interesting over the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. The wearables went from sort of a fun thing to, you look at the percentage of oxygen in the blood. People started measuring that at home. They started reporting that completely separately because we were in such a different situation, and access to healthcare was fraught with the fact that you were going to be going in to a situation where you might get sicker. And so people were staying away, and people were looking at what can they do to get information, get it to providers without having to actually be touched or in any way get more illness.
Sure. And I know one of the things that, you know, I personally want to explore on this and talk to a lot of people about is just electronic medical records. A lot of other countries, we've obviously learned through our studies of different healthcare systems around the world, a lot of other countries have more robust and complete electronic medical records. They have records that can be accessed by doctors in all points of the healthcare system. And I feel like in the United States, we really don't have that. You know, we have my personal experience is just with my chart, and it's supposed to be this thing where all of my medical records are located conveniently in one place. And I know for a fact firsthand that this is just not true for me anyway. So I'm really excited to learn about how other countries have done this so well, and what that sort of streamlined, you know, communication and information, you know, what can you do with that when you have a system where all of your doctors actually know what's going on with you because it's all right there for them and for you? Whereas, you know, if I go to my primary care physician that I've been seeing for 30 years, I still have to fill out paperwork when I go in. Why is that? If he refers me to another doctor, I have to fill out the same paperwork I just filled out for my PCP. Why is that? How come all these other countries have figured that out and we're kind of lagging behind? So I'm very eager to learn about that in particular as we talk to all the people that we'll interview.
Yeah, and you know, the upside is you do get that interaction between the providers. Everybody's looking at the same information. You fill it out once, you get it there. The downside is, how do you assure that that information is private and it's not something that anybody has, but the people that you want to have it, and the people who absolutely need it. And I think when you look at other countries, Estonia comes to mind. They've really led the way in how to create security and privacy in the medical records to achieve that first, and then to go to the ability to access the information for the providers that need it.
Yeah, the security problem or potential problem that gets introduced with that sort of thing is definitely something we'll be talking about, I know for sure. Let's kind of switch gears to behavioral health a little bit and learn, or talk about that. I know, there's certainly, not to be so COVID focused, but there's been a big increase in depression, loneliness, feelings of isolation, all of that stuff because of the pandemic and quarantining and not being able to have family gatherings or get together with friends for literally a couple of years now. Obviously, those things existed before, the start of COVID in 2019, right? But it's really come to the forefront now. And I think behavioral health was kind of shoved into the forefront of people's minds in healthcare. How do we get access to it? Do we have enough professionals to administer it? How is it covered? What's the stigma behind it? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, behavioral health has really come to be to the forefront. I mean, it always has been an issue, particularly health plans, particularly those serving Medicaid, have known that a significant percentage of their members have behavioral health issues. And access to behavioral health has always been a problem. And it's not just in this country, it really is worldwide. But what's happened is, as people have been in isolation, as we've been in quarantine, these problems have been exacerbated. And trying to find behavioral health providers that could help people going through the struggles of isolation. I mean, they're not being around their friends. They're not being around their family. Every day is sort of a drumbeat of dire messages. When does this end? How does this end? Does this end with me, being in oxygen? Does this, what happens? So I think behavioral health has really come to the forefront around the world. What are we going to do to give people access to behavioral health? And that's not going to get better, because one of the things that we're already seeing is post-traumatic shock from having to go through this. I mean, people have been in a wartime environment, and the slightest thing can set that off. So access to the right kind of behavioral health, to people who can deal with it, and then the right kind of medications is critical. And nobody in the world has solved this. It's something that everybody's trying to deal with.
Sure, sure. And I mean, you mentioned the right kind of drugs there, right? So pharmacy is obviously a huge piece of healthcare, especially in the United States. I think it's one of only two countries that allow public advertising of pharmaceuticals, right? I think that's a relatively rare thing where you can just have drug companies advertise drugs on TV or whatever. So, let's talk about, pharmacy and pharmaceuticals for a minute and their role in healthcare for the United States and globally.
It's interesting. And in this country, we actually support most of the research and development that goes on in the world, both financially and with our labs. And interesting enough, we don't have the cheapest pharmacy costs. We have actually the highest costs in the world. And that's an issue as we start looking at more chronic disease. So if we start looking at behavioral health meds are very expensive. And getting people access to them and getting people access to them at lower costs is going to be critical. But even beyond behavioral health meds, take something as simple as insulin. Insulin has gone through the roof now for people, and people who have serious issues where they require medication simply to exist are finding that they're going to have to deal with, do I eat? Or do I take my meds? Do I pay my rent? Do I have a car? So pharmacy is an issue in many ways. One is obviously the affordability. The other is that the pipeline has got some dramatically exciting drugs in it. I mean, if add to that even the whole concept of now the mRNA vaccines, which is going to change the world of healthcare as we start looking down the road at what can happen with that.
Yeah, it certainly seems like the innovation in pharmaceuticals is something we really focus on here at home. And you know, one story I always think about is when we were studying the system in Cuba and just their whole battle with pharmaceuticals and, you know, not being able to import finished products and things like that. You know, they're manufacturing all of their own drugs because of you know, the embargo situation and the history there. And, you know, they just said, if you are sick with certain things, that's just kind of bad luck, you know, and they have limited resources to where, you know, they spend most of their time, money, and effort and expertise on the things that affect most of the population. And if you're one of the unlucky few who gets this really rare and obscure sickness, it's just kind of a bad, you know, deal of the cards. Whereas in the United States, you know, we think being sick is an option. And if I am sick with something, there should be medicine for it. And I think our pharmaceutical companies really take that to heart. And we spend a lot of time and effort and money and expertise coming up with treatments for, you know, issues that affect very, very few people, and they in turn become very, very expensive to administer. So it's very interesting to me to just see the great difference between, you know, somebody's approach like Cuba and then our approach, where we will treat anything no matter the cost. And there are plenty of places that say we can help you with the big things, and other than that, you're on your own.
And I know we saw the same thing in Sweden, where they really are treating the bulk of the population. In the United States, we do tend to, particularly if you have insurance, if you have money, you can get pretty much everything available. But in a lot of countries where the government is funding it, the goal is really the overall population health, not the health of an individual. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a distinction between us and the rest of the world, is if you have money here, you can get not necessarily everything you need, because in many cases there aren't things that can take care of people, but you can get anything available. Where in other countries where the government's funding it, it may be more of a global, more what the population benefits from, not what from the individual benefits from.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. And I mean, I guess the last pillar that we want to address throughout this, and obviously we're going to have many episodes with many experts from many different countries to talk about these things. So it's not just going to be one conversation on technology or one conversation on pharmaceuticals. We want to get opinions and expertise from many different people, from many different perspectives. Because I think, and Don, I know you agree, that's going to be the best way that we can identify strengths, successes, pitfalls to avoid, things like that. But the last topic is something that is inevitable. It is something that will happen to everyone, everywhere, and that's aging. And what do you do with an aging population and their needs for healthcare increase? So let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, long-term care is, it's always been the elephant in the room. It's not very exciting to deal with, but if you look at Medicaid, for instance, two-thirds of Medicaid members in the United States are in programs for basic healthcare. But one third of the costs of Medicaid goes for taking care of people's basic healthcare. Less than one third of the people in Medicaid require long-term care, yet that's over two thirds of the cost of the entire Medicaid program. And that barely touches the need. Long-term care is something that the world is going to have to face, particularly the Western countries, where we're seeing an aging population, less children to take care of the aging population. And as we talked about before with some of the drugs that allow people with chronic, somewhat debilitating illnesses to live a lot longer, who's going to take care of them? How is this going to work? And there isn't a country that stands out. Japan, where there are one of the oldest populations in the world, they're starting to look at robots to take care of people. Other countries are looking at immigrants to come in and help with their long-term care. But exactly what does long-term care encompass, and how do we deal with it going forward? Because it is not going to be, the problem is going to get much, much worse than it is right now. And hospitalizing people who really aren't sick, they're just older and they can't do some of the things that that they used to be able to do at home, that's going to be a struggle for all the Western world. And it's going to cost a lot and it's going to take a lot of resources to figure out. So we would like to look, let's look at the world and see what's going on. Who's doing this? What are the different approaches?
Sure. And what all plays into you know, everyone's approach to that, you know, how much of this is cultural, how much of one country's solutions can be replicated in another one's if the culture is different or the population distribution is different. You know, if a country has culturally a lot of children and everybody stays home and all the kids take care of the parents and that's just the way that it is, that might not happen in, you know, a place or even certain regions, like within the United States, for instance, where there might be fewer children or kids who, you know, don't stay within a few miles of home and take care of mom and dad in the retirement and all of that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting topic to discuss, especially with folks from different parts of the world. So, I think that's great. I'm really looking forward to it. I know we've got a lot of conversations to have, Don. I'm excited to go on this journey with you.
I am too. See who we can pull in from around the world to help us better understand this.
Absolutely. Awesome. So we'll talk to everybody listening or watching next time. And we're going to dive right into these four topics that we outlined today. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.